All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wiscommon Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's another beautiful day up north because it's a holiday weekend. It's Friday, May 26, 2023. Memorial Day weekend is officially getting underway. It's 41 degrees up here on Lake Wissota. Coming up on the program this morning, we're going to remember on this Memorial Day weekend that the ultimate sacrifice was made by many Americans who protected us in service, not just on the conventional battlefields, but beyond, something we'll want you to keep in mind on this Memorial Day weekend. Also, Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil looks at what presidential candidate Ron DeSantis has done for Florida, or done to Florida, since becoming governor. In our second hour, the attacks on voting rights, they're not always overt. Sometimes they're the subtle inconveniences that try to make you feel like voting shouldn't be a priority. And so we'll talk to a leader in the national group Priorities USA about their commitment to protect voting rights from now through the 2024 elections. And as often happens on this Friday morning, we will not only have Kia Vakil, we'll also have Dan Schumacher doing sports, Mark Jacob, author and media critic, former editor at the Chicago Tribune and Sun-Times. All of that ahead on this Friday morning. And along the way, if you have any comments or things you want to share with a statewide radio audience, you can call us at 844-967-2789. First person you'll talk to will be one Aaron Zommers at our studio in Madison. Mr. Zommers, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, you had said, I don't know that anything has changed, but you weren't making any big plans for the holiday weekend, just enjoying a little extra time off, yes?
Yeah, I might go home to Manitowoc, visit family a little bit. I am not sure yet.
Okay. Well, you know what? You got an extra day to think about it. So there.
Yeah, exactly.
We got the pontoon out for the first time. You might recall I mentioned starting off the week that I spent the weekend, you know, getting it in the water and, you know, getting it all cleaned up and everything. And yesterday was just the perfect day. I mean, it's going to be just the most perfect weather weekend. I mean, you can't possibly think about staying in on a weekend that's going to be this gorgeous. We never get this for the whole holiday weekend.
Yeah, definitely. I know wherever I am, I'll try to spend as much time outside as I can.
Well, you won't lack for activities being there. I'm pretty sure is the Dane County Farmers Market already doing its thing on the Capitol Square there?
It sure is.
Yep. So you got that going for you early in the mornings and, you know, everything else from, you know, the bike paths and everything that you have. And then up here in our literal neck of the woods, you know, the campgrounds are going to start filling up here pretty soon. The part of the reason I got out on the water as I did last evening was that holiday weekends up here on Lake Wissota, holiday weekends are a little busy on the water, shall we say.
I can imagine.
And, it, you know, not always in the best way. You know, I mean, a lot of people are good boaters and they're, you know, they have the courtesy of respecting the rules of the road or however this old man wants to phrase it. But, you know, on a holiday weekend, you get a few folks that they're not there quite as often and things get really noisy and they churn up the water really good. Whereas last night it was just smooth as glass. Almost nobody else, you know, as we're heading up river. And I mean, you talk about living the dream. No, it's always nice when you can get a moment like that now and then, whether you're in the city or the country or the water or wherever. And last night was really one of those. It was gorgeous. It really was.
Yeah.
You know why? Because I didn't watch the Brewers game.
Yeah. That would have put a damper on it.
Jeepers. Oh my goodness. Look, we love our Brewers and, you know, they got blanked last night, 5-0. There's not much more I can really add about that, except that they'll try it again this evening with Freddy Peralta on the mound going up against the San Francisco Giants. And the Giants had, was it 5 or 6 pitchers? I got to scroll down through my notes here. We're just going to go ahead and start the sports segment now here. 6 pitchers. It was a designated bullpen game, so there really wasn't a starting pitcher. 6 pitchers combined and held the Brewers to 4 hits total. And the Giants beat the Brewers 5-0. Freddie Peralta tonight. Then there will be games Saturday and Sunday afternoons. And then they're on the road next week to Toronto and Cincinnati. Quick reminder that if you are a Civic Media listener and you're in the Fox Valley, you got no excuse. You got to be hearing the Brewers on 98.3 FM, Oshkosh Air Support, and 1100 AM. And in the Richland Center area, listen to News from the Center, 107.7 and 1450 AM. And that's where you're going to catch the Brewers on a couple of these fine stations. As far as that weather forecast goes, we're going to get a full update from Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology. She will give us a full forecast about 1 hour from now and help take us into the weekend. And then, as I was already starting to look ahead to next week, of course, Monday, we will have a rebroadcast for the Memorial Day holiday. And then Tuesday, we will be talking to Hans Breitenmoser, and I think we're going to get into just how much of Wisconsin agricultural products are reliant on the Mississippi River to go to market, and that means repairing the infrastructure. There's some parts of the lock and dam system that haven't received a full upgrade in decades, and that's changing for one very key lock. But we'll just talk more about how products get to market, and probably ask him as well his thoughts after we talked earlier this week to John Rosenau and Mercedes Falk and Ruth Conniff about Ruth's book Milked, and the status of immigrant laborers on Wisconsin dairy farms. So we already have things to look forward to next week, but first we got to get through this morning. We are going to talk about Memorial Day next, and then Kia Vakil coming up at 6:30. A very busy morning ahead here on Up North News Radio. Stick around. We'll be back. We have our music break and history lesson coming up at 6:50, but we'll go ahead and tease right now that this is the anniversary of the birth of Levon Helm from the band whom you heard here just now, born this day in 1940, passed away in 2012. So we'll hear a little bit more about that throughout the morning, along with some of the other birthdays and history notes on the day. I'm trying to decide whether to put a lot of stock in this news story about Major League Baseball Commissioner Robert Manfred coming to Milwaukee. The headline in the Journal Sentinel puts it rather bluntly. The baseball commissioner has a message for Wisconsin: fix American Family Field or else. And of course, the indirect message being that maybe the Brewers would be relocated if the state and the city don't participate in helping to fund ongoing maintenance of American Family Field, which isn't that terribly old, but like any facility, ages and has the need for maintenance and other things like that. But it just doesn't carry as much weight when you've got, Wrigley Field right down the road, which is, 112 years old or something like that? So I don't know what to tell you. The blackmail, extortion talk is going to be out there. And yes, that's somewhat understandable. But look, here's what we don't have here right now. This is not the Oakland A's. And that's part of what the commissioner was getting at, was saying, look, this weekend, I think it is, they're going to formally approve allowing the Oakland A's to move to Las Vegas. But they've also had at least 10, maybe 20 years of discussions about building a new stadium. The Oakland Coliseum, again, it's a coliseum. It was not built to be a baseball stadium. But folks there over the years could never come to an agreement on how to pay for such a product. And so ultimately, nothing got done, and the team is finally getting the okay to move to Oakland. Could something that dire happen to the Milwaukee Brewers? Yes, theoretically, but certainly not anytime soon. So there is plenty of time to develop a plan that involves some form of cost sharing on this. And I think that's the toughest, that is the toughest part for any fan to deal with, or especially a non-fan, I should say, a taxpayer, is why should we pay for these things? And, you know, people are going to disagree, and it's not restricted to, you know, Democrats or Republicans. When Fiserv Forum was being constructed and when the legislature debated public funding for it, again, it didn't break down across party lines, but there were people from, you know, far outside the Milwaukee area who supported the state funding because they understood that that is part of, you know, the state's tourism infrastructure, is having these sports and entertainment venues that are, you know, attracting major league events or major attractions. What some of these legislators also knew was that they would want state funding for their projects, you know, in Eau Claire or in Appleton or wherever the case may be. It's not just major league stadiums that get state support. And so I think there's going to be plenty of time to talk about it. I think it's a little early to be speculating on the Brewers, you know, looking like they're trying to blackmail the taxpayers at this point. But that's also no reason to dismiss it as, you know, something that's impossible. One need only look at what's happening with the Oakland A's right now. Let me take a moment to focus on Memorial Day and a part of it that is regularly overlooked. That's changing to a degree, and I'm afraid that current world events will make it even more relevant in the coming years. And I'm talking very much so about the Cold War and the old Soviet Union, which Vladimir Putin is trying to put back together. But I don't want to get ahead of myself. I want to come back to the topic of Memorial Day and our Cold War veterans. We rightfully place much of our Memorial Day focus on those who died in the service of our country during times of war, whether they fell on battlefields or died at sea or in the air. These are the men and women who are America's real and ultimate heroes. They gave their lives so that we can remain free, democratic, a republic, self-governing in accordance with values that protect our speech, protect our press, protect our lives, our pursuit of happiness, our desire to secure the blessings of liberty, not only to ourselves, but to our posterity. But those who fell in times of declared wars were not America's only heroes whose lives were lost in service. From 1945 until 1991, the United States and the then Soviet Union were in what was called a state of Cold War. No direct hostilities, but plenty of proxy conflicts, plenty of service all over the world, decades of service and sacrifice and loss of life. I have to admit to not really spending any significant time thinking about those who lost their lives serving this country during the Cold War until my dad passed away 4 years ago. I knew all about his service in the U.S. Army as well as the Guard and Reserve later in his life, but it was in reviewing that service and preparing for his memorial that I came to better appreciate what he and others did for us over the decades, and in his case, the 60s, 70s, 80s onward. You see, when we think of nuclear weapons, we think of two types. First, there were those large, clunky bombs that were dropped in World War II, almost cartoon-like in their size and shape. And then later came the missiles. To this day, are parked in, you know, underground silos all over the country and places around the world, missiles that can be launched from ships, submarines, and airplanes with nuclear weapons attached. But somewhere in between, before all those missiles came to be, there was a period after World War II when nuclear weapons were largely a part of field artillery. It's almost quaint now to think that there was a time when nuclear weapons were considered tactical weaponry for battlefields. As we now know, there's no such thing as a battlefield anymore. If two sides are at war, there's no longer some now ancient sense of honor to limit civilian casualties. Sadly, anyone is fair game nowadays. But back then, before the silos, tactical nuclear weaponry was often hiding somewhere in the woods. And that's where you would have found my dad in the mid-1960s, roaming somewhere along the border between East and West Germany with a howitzer, just in case things got hot and his unit was called upon to blast a shell and incinerate an enemy just a few miles away before they could do the same to him. Now, that's not everything that the Cold War was about, of course, but that's my family connection to it. It's how I came to be reminded that for all the talk, and rightly so, about Vietnam at the time, there were also soldiers, sailors, Marines, airmen serving worldwide to guard against anything that might have come up from the Soviet bloc. All of those Cold War veterans deserve our gratitude for their service, and some of them didn't come home. There were some direct, isolated conflicts, not always with uniformed military, but with, there were guerrilla groups, there were terrorist cells, spies and other operatives, there were aircraft and vehicle accidents, there were weapons mishaps. Each loss of life was a reminder that our men and women didn't retreat behind borders after World War II. Our heroes were out there all around the world, looking out for us over the decades. So this Memorial Day, when you take a moment to remember the Americans whose lives were lost in the service of our country, remember that sacrifices are not limited to declared wars and to fixed battlefields, and give a nod of gratitude for all who served. As we look at what is keeping our attention nowadays, and the values that we fight for, whether it's, you know, through military service, public service, or, you know, just as active members of society, I sometimes really worry the extent to which some people want to take us backwards to a darker time, a time, as we're going to discuss in the next hour, where people were actively targeted to try to get them to not vote, to restrict them or to dissuade them from voting. That's just one example. Another is essentially the whitewashing of history, or at least the active resistance toward teaching a fuller version, a more honest version of history, and being more diverse and inclusive overall in society. We see it in Wisconsin, where Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is actively targeting schools that have DEI programs, diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. We have seen that from, you know, even Ron DeSantis in declaring his presidential campaign during that glitchy Twitter Spaces event. A lot of it sounded like just some other right-wing radio talk show host. He was talking about CRT and DEI and ESG and you know, just a whole alphabet soup of dog whistles. And in some cases, you know, you don't need the dog whistles. You don't need the little acronyms. Some people just come right out and say it. That takes me to a news story in Alabama. The headline, some Alabama conservatives say that textbooks indoctrinate students and that they have, quote, too much black history. The story reads, the State Board of Education has approved English language arts textbooks for kindergarten through third grade. Again, keep this in mind, kindergarten through third grade. After a public hearing where critics suggested the books had too much black history and multicultural stories, one woman said the books, and again, these are English books, not history books, would, quote, indoctrinate our children with DEI, SEL, social emotional learning, a woke agenda, and grooming our little ones. Another woman, Kathy Odom, who identified herself as a resident of Mobile County, said she had concerns about the content. Quote, I thought personally there was too much black history, she said. And last year, the Alabama legislature approved a bill that restricted information about gender and sexuality in schools. This year, a bill restricting the teaching of so-called divisive concepts, wink, wink, is making its way through the legislature there. Alabama State School Superintendent Eric Mackey said in March, books that face opposition in Alabama may have been written for California students where they have requirements for diversity in their texts. I don't know that for sure, he said, but I will tell you that some of the issues that we seem to deal with, I don't want to say definitely are being because of other big states, like maybe say California, they put additional things in their standards. The textbook companies write for those standards, and those may not be as well accepted here in Alabama as they are in California. Let's put it that way. Yeah, let's put it that way, Mr. State Superintendent of Schools. What is it about an English textbook where if it says Billy ran to the bus stop and instead says Malik ran to the bus stop, what is it that isn't so well accepted in Alabama? I'll give you some time to try to figure out what the answer is. We'll talk to Kia V. Keel next. You're up north.
Wisconsin.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Political correspondent Kia V. Keel. Keel, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Usual disclaimer applies that we're taping this on a Wednesday afternoon, and if you're still hearing it on a Friday, not much else new has happened, and if there's any updates or corrections to be made, we'll do so after the fact. But what we're saying is we're not that confident that between Wednesday afternoon and Friday morning that Kevin McCarthy is going to see the light and no longer hold the economy hostage. It's probably still going to be going on probably well past Friday, my guess.
Yeah, I think that's a safe assumption. Every new development has just been Republicans led by McCarthy refusing to, compromise in any real way. They want to raise the debt ceiling only if Democrats agree to just comically large spending cuts, work requirements that are designed to kick people off Medicaid and food assistance, and just all sorts of other measures that, most Democrats have no interest in doing, understandably so. Republicans are entertaining, they say they want to cut the deficit, but they refuse to actually raise taxes on billionaires and corporations, which would cut the deficit. And instead they want to, cut food and healthcare for poor people. We've seen the Biden administration, for better or worse, actually negotiate on the merits of some of these proposals from Republicans, such as, reducing spending or capping spending for a year or two, potentially, clawing back some unspent COVID relief. But there has been no equal give from Republicans, and, that has left the situation in a place where they seem pretty content to keep pushing for more. Matt Gaetz fully admitted yesterday that they're holding a hostage, and why would they give it up? And frankly, the more Democrats give in, the more Republicans are likely to do that. So unless something in the dynamic shifts, unless you start to see more pressure from, Republican donors and Wall Street, I'm not sure we get this resolved, next week, let alone by Friday.
Because as has been stated before, but now you can correct me if I'm wrong, but at no point have we heard Kevin McCarthy or other Republicans say that they're willing to give something themselves, which is what makes this a full-fledged, hostage situation. This is not a negotiation.
No, I mean, they passed their, pie in the sky bill last month, which obviously, not everything from that. They're willing to give up some of the truly crazy elements of that bill, like repealing the Inflation Reduction Act, and maybe, a couple other things. But the key things they're after, which is just gutting spending and imposing really strict work requirements, they have not budged on.
Yeah, my point being that so they've ratcheted down some of their demands, but in terms of things that would actually bring them pain, which to them would only be tax cuts for the very wealthy and military spending, and they've said no to either one of those. So again, I don't know at what point, President Biden or others, the longer that he just makes this whole one-sided thing, this show go on, you can see why some of the further left progressives in Congress are starting to get really exasperated with the whole thing.
Yeah, because in a negotiation, both sides are supposed to kind of give an equal amount, especially, Democrats control two chambers of one chamber of Congress and the White House. Republicans mm-hmm. control just the House. So, you know, they should not be the ones who dictate all of the negotiations. And for a variety of reasons, that's what's happening. One is, frankly, I don't know that most of them care if we default. And like they fully, McCarthy's top two negotiators, Garrett Graves and Patrick McHenry, who are conservatives, fully said yesterday that if Democrats give up all the, you know, basically if Democrats cave, what they'll get is the debt ceiling being raised. That's all they'll get. So they are fully admitting to holding the economy hostage. And it's important to note that they have only said they want to raise the debt ceiling for a year or two. So it's like, we'll give you back your hostage, but then we'll take it again in a year or two. So this is just this frankly insane process. And, you know, the media has not done a great job of covering it. There's a lot of these sort of DC outlets that have really kind of been a mouthpiece for Republicans. But I'll also add that Democrats have not done the best job in the press of really, you know, steering this story. And so what we're left with is this really kind of just disaster of a situation right now.
Well, it just really feeds into people's cynicism about all of this. And that's extremely unfortunate, because that's certainly not our intent here. But in reporting what the situation is, it is tough not to be cynical about some of the motivations of some folks and some of the irresponsibility of some of the media folks. But let's get this to the meat and potatoes of it. Yep. And, you know, the headline says it all in a story that you wrote for us: what happens if America defaults on its debt? And when you talk about debt, default, credit default swaps, you know, all that stuff, people's eyes glaze over. So they're like, what does it mean for me or for people like me? And you really get into that with this article.
Yeah. So at the most basic level, what's happening is the U.S. needs to borrow money to pay bills that's already accrued, that Congress has already authorized it to spend money on. That's because taxes have been slashed by Republicans on the rich and corporations for decades, while government spending has admittedly gone up. So we have this difference that needs to be made up by issuing bonds. If we exceed the debt limit, which is what's happening, then we cannot afford to pay the bills we've racked up. That means that the Treasury must decide, okay, do we pay the people who own our bonds? Do we issue Social Security payments? Do we issue military benefits? Do we issue Medicaid benefits? So effectively, the Treasury will have to decide what payments to prioritize. For the average person, what that means is if they're on Medicaid, their Medicaid benefits might be affected. If they get Social Security checks, there might be a 1 week, 2 week, 3 week delay. A lot of seniors live in poverty, cannot afford a 1 to 2 week delay. You know, veterans might have their benefits affected. It's a mess. And then when you have tens of millions of people who don't have immediate access to money or benefits that they are used to, that many of them need every week just to get by, that's going to ripple out into the greater economy. And then what you're going to have is you're going to have interest rates rise. You're going to have businesses do layoffs. You're going to have debt grow more expensive, meaning that if you want to take out a mortgage or a car loan, it's going to be more expensive. So there are very few people who would emerge from this unscathed.
In short, there is no upside. There are some people at the very top who, you know, their only impact will be that their portfolio takes a hit for a short time. Yeah. But other than them, everybody is going to feel some level of pain from this unnecessarily, you know, to no good end, because the alternative is again to reduce spending sharply, but yeah, on a small share of total spending, you know, once you take out the military and all kinds of other things. So all of this for not much of an impact at all, which is again going to hurt a lot of people for no good reason, it seems.
Yeah, that you're exactly right. You know, Republicans have ruled out spending cuts to the military, to Medicare and Social Security, most recently to VA benefits. So that leaves a very small slice of the pie to actually cut, which means the cuts to those slices have to be huge. So, you know, instead of cutting, you know, the Pentagon by, you know, 20%, you might have to cut Medicaid, SNAP, education, housing by like 50%. Right. And so that's just staggering. And it's very much just a hostage situation.
Yeah, we're talking about 41 million people who rely on SNAP to afford to put food on their table, more than 100 million people who rely on Medicare and Medicaid for health care. You've got millions of federal employees and active duty military. You've got people who get disability payments, you know, and that's not to mention the millions of job losses that would go on during this time. And again, not to get back into the politics too deeply here, but you know, if I'm in, you know, Joe Biden's position, I'm just rattling that off nonstop every day and saying, is this really what you guys want to do? And, you know, try to get more pressure put on them. But Republicans have other things to think about right now besides holding the economy hostage, and that's who's their nominee going to be. You know, former president Donald Trump learned this week that he'll be on trial in March of next year over the hush money case, you know, right in the middle of the primary season. So folks are looking at some of these other potential candidates. And, you know, now Ron DeSantis, as of Wednesday afternoon, has officially filed the paperwork to, you know, start a presidential campaign. Yep. So if one looks at what he's done in Florida, and it sure ain't good, you know, it might win a primary, but again, given the survey numbers, will he? Could he really win, you know, the nomination in the GOP? I guess I don't see it from up here.
I don't see it either. You know, anything's possible, but increasingly, you know, his poll numbers have sunk. We have what looks like a field that's going to be almost as big as 2016. Donald Trump is way ahead in the polls. And, you know, DeSantis's pitch is make America Florida. But when you actually look at Florida, things are not great. It is the most unaffordable state in terms of renting and housing. It is property insurers are fleeing the state because of natural disasters, and the state is doing very little to actually help people struggling to get insurance. And in fact, DeSantis signed a law that makes it harder for people to sue insurance companies over not paying out. The state is second in mass shootings. Guns are the third leading cause of death among kids in Florida, and they signed a bill that repeals permitless concealed carry, which means anyone can carry a gun without any training or a permit. You know, they have not expanded Medicaid, meaning there's about a million people who are missing out on health insurance that would otherwise get it. And instead, what they've done in this session under DeSantis is ban abortion after 6 weeks, expand private school vouchers, which will take taxpayer dollars from public education and let parents pay for rich private schools using taxpayer dollars. They've passed a law that allows doctors to deny care to anyone based on personal views. It also allows insurance companies to do that. So God knows what's going to happen for people filing an insurance claim. You know, if Aetna of Florida suddenly decides, I don't know if Aetna's in Florida. I'm just saying, if an insurance company in Florida decides, oh, we morally think covering cancer is wrong, we don't have to cover that. Whether that not happens or not, who knows? That's unlikely because that's so egregious. But lesser known diseases, you could absolutely see them refusing to cover birth control or transition care or anything like that. It's just one really terrible policy after another, and that's what he wants to bring to the national level.
Florida. It's just wants to bring Florida here after all of that. And I obviously it's not just going to be Democrats, it's going to be other Republicans in the field. I mean, that they don't want to look mean and attack, you know, they're not going to use Meatball Ron, you know, the way that Trump does. So they'll take that Florida record and hold it right over him. That is not going to be the easiest row for him to hoe over these next few weeks here. In fact, my suggestion, Key, is that we start the Scott Walker countdown clock. Scott Walker's presidential campaign lasted 73 days, if memory serves. So let's start the clock as of Wednesday afternoon. Let's map out 73 days beyond there. And I think that is a fair over-under on how long he lasts, and that, you know, the Republican nominee may not even be somebody who's announced yet.
Yeah, I mean, that puts us, late July, early August. I think I suspect he'll last slightly longer. But if you see Trump just embarrass him for two more months, and where the polls are, you know, if he's polling under 10% by that point, there is an element of, oh, let's just save face and save our career. Because if he gets truly embarrassed, I don't know that you recover from that. He can't run for another term as governor. So, you know, if he is just getting trounced in the next couple months, he might pull a Walker. Not that Walker's career recovered, really. But, yeah, he has a long way to go. And this field is going to keep growing bigger, which only benefits Trump, frankly.
Which, you know, again, what he gets out of that is what a lot of people got out of it, is they at least now from this point forward get to refer to themselves as former presidential candidate, except Scott Walker. You never hear that out of him because the campaign was just way too short. Kiev Akil, a national correspondent for Courier Newsroom. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too, Pat.
And I told you we'd make any corrections after the fact, and I have a big correction to make. Scott Walker's presidential campaign did not last 73 days. It lasted 71. This is Miles Davis, who was born on this date, part of our music break and history lesson, coming up in just a bit. You're up north.
WMDX.
It's music, history, and birthday time here on Up North News Radio, and this is the 75th birthday for Stephanie Lynn Nix, born in Phoenix, Arizona. Stephanie later became better known as Stevie Nix. 75 today. She was raised in California. She released an album as a very young woman with her then-boyfriend Lindsey Buckingham in 1973. Got the attention of a band from the other side of the ocean called Fleetwood Mac. They eventually transformed that group from a blues band to one of the most popular rock bands in the world. And then Stevie Nicks went on to a fabulous solo career. I have a tough time with this next birthday. Lenny Kravitz, he's 59 years old today. And the thing that makes it so rough is that that means he's 38 days older than me. And I am nowhere near what this man is in terms of looks, talent, or anything else for that matter.
Yeah, I'm sure that makes you feel very young and spry.
Sure, sure. Although, hey, you know, maybe it's never too late for me. Maybe I can follow in Lenny Kravitz's shoes. Lauryn Hill was born this day in 1975 in East Orange, New Jersey, which makes her, what, 48 years old. On this day in 1972, Mott the Hoople was on the verge of breaking up, and they're offered help from singer David Bowie, who allows them to record two songs that he, David Bowie, had written. The band takes a pass on Suffragette City, which we all would hear later on, but they did take him up on the offer to record one of his other songs that David Bowie wrote, and they took All the Young Dudes and turned it into the biggest hit and revived their career. That was 1972. In 1973, on this day, Carole King returned to her hometown of New York City to play a free concert in Central Park. The crowd was estimated at 70,000 people and included Joni Mitchell, who sang on her Tapestry album. And then get this, after enjoying the show, the 70,000 Carole King fans cleaned up after themselves using garbage bags that had been distributed by the Parks Department.
Can we start this as a trend at concerts? People,
you know,
can be slobs.
Did you notice at both the World Cup and I think the World Baseball Classic that there were a couple of nations, I want to say Japan was one of them, where that's just the thing their fans do, is they stick around after the games and they clean up their part of the stadium.
That's what I wanted to do when we went to that Brewers game, and Luke was like, no, they're sending somebody around. Just leave your garbage on the ground. And I was like, oh, I don't want to.
I know. We've become just so entitled. On this day in 1977, in a rather macabre marketing move, Kiss sent a vial of their blood to Marvel Comics to be mixed with the red ink used to print a new comic book centered around the band. See, I was 13 at the time. I do not remember buying a comic book based on the band Kiss. much less whether blood in the ink would have done anything for me one way or the other. But hey, nice marketing gimmick, right?
Yeah, it's a stunt that's been copied by plenty of others, including Lil Nas X recently, where he was putting drops of his blood on shoes. And both times, the satanic panic hit him, which was the intended effect.
I guess so. It just reminds me of that scene in The Big Bang Theory where Penny gives Sheldon a napkin that Leonard Nimoy had wiped his mouth with, and he was so happy that he now had some DNA from Dr. Spock, you know. Number one song this day in 1984 was from the movie Footloose by Denise Williams. 'Cause every time he pulls me near, I just want to chill. I can't remember the actor who played Kevin Bacon's sidekick in the movie, but can you see him doing the little goofy dance to that music?
Yeah, definitely.
Do you remember Footloose at all? On this day, a couple of years later, 1987, the first single from Richard Marx came out, Don't Mean Nothing, featuring Joel Walsh on guitar. Now, this would go to number three on the charts, and it would be the first of seven consecutive singles to place in the top five by a very big rise, immediate rise to the top by one Richard Marx. Again, hitting it big on this day in 1987. Let's see. I have a few history notes here. On this day in 1994, Michael Jackson married Lisa Marie Presley. In a secret ceremony held in the Dominican Republic, the couple would divorce 20 months later. On this day in 2008, Paul McCartney was given an honorary doctorate of music from Yale. On this day in 2016, Gucci Mane was released from prison after serving 3 years for gun-related charges. He went straight home and recorded a song to be released the following day. Aaron tells me the title is First Day Out of the Feds, or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm certainly not a Gucci Mane fan. Yeah, I was gonna say
neither one of us is up to speed on our Gucci Mane. I do know Pink, and I know that on this day 1 year ago, she appeared on the final episode of the Ellen DeGeneres Show singing "What About Us." I did not know that she had written and performed the theme song to the Ellen DeGeneres Show. So there was,
I did not either.
I know. So we had that going for us, if nothing else. All right, I want to take a moment here just to get back to the news, because we're going to start off the next hour with an interview with the Deputy Executive Director from Priorities USA, all about voting rights and protecting your right to vote from all kinds of interference and obstruction. So in getting back to the debt limit fight for just a minute, and again, fight is not really the right word for it. It's a hostage situation that House Republicans have put the country on the, you know, teetering on the brink of a recession here if this thing doesn't get resolved one way or the other. The national headlines, you know, the New York Times, for example, this morning is hinting that negotiators are getting close to a compromise that would allow Republicans to point to some spending reductions, and Democrats would be able to say that they prevented large cuts. So I think at this point, both sides are looking for a way to save face. Again, that's not really Joe Biden's job. It's not really the Democrats' job to save the Republicans from themselves. But apparently, that's what has to be done to keep the economy from crashing. So in the meantime, yesterday, Wisconsin's two Democratic members of Congress, Mark Pocan and Gwen Moore, released statements where they singled out two Wisconsin Republicans, Brian Steil and Derek Van Orden. And it was largely based in the fact that Republican Speaker Kevin McCarthy was letting the Republicans go home for the Memorial Day weekend as we teeter on the verge of a possible recession if a deal isn't agreed to and voted on. And I think the thing that's so ironic about all of the back and forth on this is that this is the party that's talking about wanting to add work requirements to certain federal programs. And we hear about work requirements from Republicans in the legislature about state programs. The Republicans who stayed home for 9 months last year and got paid for it. There should be a work requirement for Congress and the legislature. We'll be back. You're up north.